NBA draft is a little boring, right? Can we just be honest? That's what this show is all about. I just want it to be an honest conversation. I was expecting a little bit more action. I was hoping for some splashy deals. I watched Shams on every other show going, I saw one where he's like, don't sleep, don't go to sleep, don't bat an eye. The action's coming. It was pretty quiet. Pelicans made a dumb trade that I for the life of me cannot understand. Some picks got swapped. All right. And the Raptors took the kid with the soccer commentator's name. Colin Murray Boyles. Couldn't you picture it? Like a Scottish guy? Okay, I could. Colin Murray Boyles scores. What a goal for Colin Murray Boyles. The kid from South Carolina, the hybrid tweener. I'll be honest, I didn't see this pick coming. I really didn't. And I felt stupid not seeing the pick coming the second it happened. So I went, oh, right. Forgot about Project 6ix9ine and the fact that Masai loves a good old defensive wing. And that's what this guy projects to be. And I was genuinely shocked that he did not take Kamon Moloach out of Duke. The 7'2" kid who blocks a ton of shots. And I thought was kind of a nice successor, backup big to Jakob Poeltl. Gave him a little bit more depth. It was one of those picks where it looked like position of need. Fits in line with draft picks that they've made in the past. High upside in terms of him as a defender. I think that there's a lot more there from a shooting standpoint. High pedigree school, high pedigree coaching, all those different things. I really did think it was going to be Kamon Moloach. I don't hate the Colin Murray Boyles pick. This isn't one for me where I went, oh, no, no. I certainly wasn't like all of you freaking out about the F-bomb that he dropped. Which, by the way, it's not that I'm better than all of you, okay? It's not that I'm better than you. But sometimes it's hard not to think that when I see things like the internet's reaction to a kid who's getting drafted. I think he has a smile on his face and uses a cuss word, and everybody in this city spirals out of control. It's like, he doesn't want to be here. I'm just learning who this person is, and I don't think he wants to be here. Based on a small snippet of body language, that was too much. And then he's like, the poor kid's up there, and the first interview he does, the interviewer asks him a question about it, and he's like, doesn't even know what they're talking about. And then he goes to the media, and the Toronto media, and of course, they hold him to account. They say, what happened? People got to know. And he said, what I said was not a bad thing by any means. Just a crazy moment. Obviously, thankful for the opportunity. Ready to take it on and do whatever they need me to do. End quote. That's Colin Murray Boyles. Colin Murray Boyles. That was his on-camera reaction. So I got to tell you, this is the thing. That had nothing to do with that kid saying the F word. That is purely this city and this fan base and our inferiority complex that I've been pleading with people we would get over. And I really did think that we were going to get past that in 2019. And part of me thinks that maybe Kawhi leaving and that just made it reemerge. I don't know what it is, but I remember doing podcasts when the Raptors won the championship going, this has got to be the death of the inferiority complex. Because the Raptors won a championship and we're not going to be this way anymore. We're not going to be the hypersensitive fan base. We're not going to do the embarrassing thing like this all the time. And here we go. Kid swears on the draft floor and he hates it here. He doesn't want to be a Raptor. Oh, crazy. I didn't think it first. I genuinely did not think it for a second. People started texting me about it. And then I went to Twitter to check on some of the reaction to the pick. Because again, I thought it was a bit of a surprising pick. I didn't see anybody that was as high on Murray Boyles as Jay Billis which that was kind of comforting, right? He had him as his best player available in that slot. But I do, again, think most people thought that when Maluak fell to that position, he was going to end up being the pick. It was just, again, it was just the feel. I had seen Murray Boyles mocked a little bit later than this, and I didn't think that this was going to be a fit for a Raptors team. That, yeah, seems like they've been trying to get a little bit more shooting. I thought that they were trying to get a little bit more size, and that's not really what this guy is. So here's the positives. The defense is incredible. Huge wingspan. He's going to be a problem, and you could see him. I did wonder when they picked him how much of watching this last Oklahoma City series actually influenced this pick. That watching Lu Dort and watching Alex Caruso, if the Raptors were maybe in between guys and they went, you know, we could really see him in this finals. We could really see this kid being a defensive anchor who gets into people. We like the way that the whistles have gone, which is that there's fewer touch fouls. And we think that this guy can be a star perimeter defender. Like that idea. Don't really love it at 9, but still, that's the big plus side. I do like the playmaking. I think that he is like a gives up the ball to make the right play kind of guy. The turnovers are pretty high, though, so that's a bit of a red flag. But either way, I think that the instincts are right. The problem is that the shooting mechanics are not good. I think that people probably saw the clip of him at the combine shooting threes. And yeah, I think he's going to get left alone in the NBA. I don't think that people are going to be afraid of this kid shooting. Not for a while anyways. Maybe it gets there. I'll ask Tate Frazier about whether he thinks that it can get there. But to me, it looks like he's got a clunky delivery. And it looks like he pushes the ball with his wrist. It's not a follow through. It's like almost what you would picture at a pop-a shot. It's not great. So there's been some Draymond Green comparisons. I think that's the one that people go to when they're like, oh yeah, like really plus defender, good rebounder, tweener, likes to make plays. If that's what he is, great. Amazing pick. Thought it was a little high at 9. And I will say this too. It seems like the Raptors offered that pick to the Boston Celtics for Derek White. And from a fit standpoint, that would have been nice for me. I wasn't overly thrilled about the idea of trading the 9 pick. I did think that there was going to be a lot of talent there, but yeah, that one would have been all right for me. Anyways, Tate Frazier of the Ringer's One Shining Podcast with Tate Frazier joins me now. What's up, buddy? How are we doing? Thanks for doing this, especially early, man.
Of course, man. Happy to be here. Happy to talk about the draft. And, you know, I know you're locked in. I know you're already breaking down Kyler Murray Boyle's shot. So, yeah. I love to hear it, and I'm excited to talk about it all, man.
Yeah. Well, the first thing that got broken down was him saying a swear, and then our inferiority complex as a city just pouring out immediately. It was like on every social media page in the entire city, like, oh, we're in trouble. This kid doesn't want to be here. I'm like, God, we're never getting over this. It's just not going to happen for Toronto. He didn't even know. He's like, he sits down on the podium and they're asking him questions about it. He's like, yeah, all right. No, it was nothing. And so I think everybody in the city is now finally calming down. So before we get into anything else, I do want to get your thoughts on this kid, because I'll be honest, I didn't see him in that range for the Raptors. When I did my show yesterday, I picked out like a couple of scenarios. I thought they were going to trade the pick, first of all. So them keeping it was a bit of a surprise. And then when they didn't decide to move back stayed in their spot and Maluak was there, I went, oh, okay, this is a no-brainer. I even texted a friend that, hey, if this isn't Maluak, it'll be one of the most shocking picks that I can ever remember. And they go with Colin Murray Boyles, who, again, I like this player, but I hadn't seen anybody as high on him as Jay Billis, who on the ESPN broadcast still had him as his best available player. I'm curious, yeah, where you were at with Murray Boyles, if you thought this was the range, and yeah, what you think of the player.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I mean, I like him as a person. I really like who he is and how he kind of carries himself and things like that, right? I felt that when they made this pick at number 9, they made this pick for the Thunder. There was a lot of smoke and scuttlebutt that the Thunder really liked Murray Boyles. So they liked someone kind of in that 9, 10, 11 range, and they were going to trade up for it. So when they took Murray Boyles, I assumed they were making that pick for somebody else. And like you said, it's kind of the, you know, the information, you know, kind of spilled out from the situation. And Murray Boyles is asked about, you know, his F-bomb that he dropped. A lot of that stuff, too, by the way, is like on delay. So what we see is not actually what, you know, it's not one-to-one. So I think there's always been some confusion with that, right? With every draft, we've had some moments where a little bit awkward because of some of the delays. So I'll give Maria Boyles a break for that. As far as the fit with the Raptors, I understand how they kind of talk themselves into him because he is sort of this defensive specialist. I think there is a lot of room for growth. I do think, like I said, just the personality-wise, you know, you never know like what's in the, you know, the mind of someone or in the heart of someone, but I do feel like Murray Boyles kind of checks those boxes. So I can understand from an interview standpoint why Masai and the rest of the group really liked him. I think they looked at the board. They were like, we don't have anybody that we're really in love with. I think a lot of people just assume Malawaj felt like a Raptors pick, right? You know what I mean? You said it like again, it was on the nose to be the guy. But Murray Boyles, I mean, there are some, you know, some reasons to be excited just because of the defensive tenacity that can, he kind of has as a player. And again, just sort of the makeup of who he is as a person, I think that carries a lot of weight. And I think that's the reason why the Raptors really liked him. But the fit from a basketball standpoint, I still feel like there is a little bit there to kind of poke and prod into. But for him to be a top 10 pick, that was a little bit shocking for me. But again, I knew there were some teams in that, like, you know, 14, 15, 16 range that really liked Murray Boyles. I thought the Raptors made a pick for one of those teams, but I guess they talked internally and said he's our guy.
Yeah. Again, I can't stress how little I like the shooting. Like, they showed his field goal percentage where they're like, look. And I went, no, he's scoring. Like, yeah, he's an undersized guy. He's a bit of a tweener, and he scores at the basket, and he's got a nice little game inside, but I do wonder if that will translate the same way in the NBA. The fit for the Raptors, I will say that's where I kind of understand the pick a little bit more with the team that they have. Because it's like they've got Scotty Barnes, who they want to be building around. They want more offense from him. They just traded for Brandon Ingram. They've got Quickly. They still haven't been able to move RJ Barrett. I do like the idea of bringing in a guy who is – pretty unselfish with the basketball and doesn't need his own looks to get going. Like, ultimately, do I think that this should have been the pick? No. Like, if you were asking me, hey, who's the most talented guys remaining, I wouldn't have had him there. But in terms of this roster, and I know that the is there enough basketballs to go around take is a little tired. Like, we've seen enough good teams now make that work. But for a guy that doesn't need to have the ball to be effective or need to get a certain amount of shots to be effective with this current iteration that I think is trying to figure things out, I really get it from this standpoint or that standpoint. And the other one is, I do wonder if they were influenced by watching the Thunder. Like, you mentioned that people thought that he was going to be their pick and that he was sort of their prototype player. And the way that Caruso and Dort affected this championship, that the Raptors watched that and maybe they were close between him and Malawak, and then they went, you know what, this is going to be a differentiator for us. We want one of those kind of players, one of those disruptors that can really take a star perimeter player off of his game.
Yeah, I think that's a good call. And I will say, just for Murray Boyles, if you're a fan and you don't really understand like why they made the pick, there's a game March 1st against Arkansas, which I think was the coup d'etat of his whole career, kind of the best game that he had all season. He was 12 for 16 from the field, 35 points, 11 to 12 from the free throw line. Only took one three. He did miss it, but again, he only took one. He is smart with the shots that he takes. I mean, again, it goes back to kind of the makeup of who he is as a person. I think that is the thing that you're buying into. And we live in a time now where guys are just taking shots away from your main guys. Like, Murray Boyles is not going to take shots away. I don't think Malawak would have taken shots away either, obviously. But I do think that Murray Boyles is not going to be someone that's going to be a me guy. He's going to be a team guy. And I think that's something that if you're the Raptors, like, we got enough stars. We need guys who can fill in, play a role, and help us kind of move into that next tier in the Eastern Conference. And I do think that CMB does that.
Well, the other thing, too, with him is, do you think that the rebounding translates to the NBA as effectively with his size?
I think that rebounding translates just because rebounding is anticipation. And I think anticipation is like a knack. And I do think it's something that he kind of has inherently. And if you kind of just go through the game log over the past two seasons with Murray Boyles and just look at the rebounding numbers, you're going to be pretty proud and pretty impressed, like, with what he was able to do. I mean, pretty much, if it's not in the double digits, I mean, it's around the range. You know what I mean? It's 9, yeah. It's 8, it's 7. You know what I mean? It's always in that kind of spot. The only game this year where he really struggled, talking about the size that you're dealing with, which was against Florida. He struggled in that game, only played 29 minutes in that game. I think it was like in mid-February or something like that. But that was the one game that I remember being like, okay, the size is actually getting to him here. Again, Florida is one of the longest and lengthiest teams in the country, so there's a reason why they had an impact on him. But I do think that he's smart enough to kind of find his spots and use his size and use his leverage as a way to, kind of impact the game from a rebounding standpoint. I will say, I think the rebounding will translate, and I do think that will be something that will be a plus thing. I mean, defense and rebounding, those are two things that usually are a calling card to translate to the next level.
Well, yeah, and part of the reason I bring that up is, to me, the biggest issue I had with Malawak was not, hey, can he become a shooter? Because I think that the form is nice and that eventually he will be able to grow into that. But every time I watched him and every time you look at his box score, you're like, where's the rebounds? You're 7-2. And people will go, well, he's protecting the rim and he's defending. And I went, yeah, but can I get 8? You know, can I get 8 rebounds? It's got to be something where I'm like, 2? This isn't – I didn't like his instincts as a rebounder. I didn't think that was a really quality part of his game, especially at that size. And so if I'm trying to split between these two, which I think a lot of people are going to do moving forward for the Raptors, right? Like, there will be other picks in this draft that hit. I do want to ask you about some of those dudes. But if we're doing that direct comparison, that was one of the biggest things for me where I was like, oh, okay, you know what? I really like this element of it is – you got the dog who can rebound. And I just think that, again, that's another skill set. If the Raptors are looking to be a defensive team, which they really were effective at in the second half of the season last year, a lot of the personnel that they've got, I want to be able to get the defensive rebound too. And Malawak, that was the one hole in the defense that I went, that I think this is real and going to be tough for him to improve.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, CMB is more in a force, and I feel like Malawak is more in a finesse game, you know what I mean? So, I mean, if you're trying to sell the idea of this tenacious defense with the length of this team and, like, we're going to kind of impose who we are from that kind of size and freakish, you know, athleticism that we have across the board, especially in the front court, I see the vision, and I do think that Malawak, I mean, I think a lot of people, myself included, just kind of did the matchmaker thing where it's like, okay, the Raptors have a type. Malawak fits the type. You know, they're one-to-one. It makes a lot of sense. So I think that was the other part of this, too, where it was like everyone had kind of already done this foregone conclusion in their mind. They make the pick for Murray Boyles. We assume it's a trade. We realize it's not a trade. And then we're all kind of doing the, the revisionist history here, trying to figure out, Captain Hindsight, how this all happened. But I do think that he's probably been on their list for, 18 months at this point, and they probably have done a lot of scouting, a lot of interviewing, and a lot of background intel on CMB, and they probably like who he is as a person. And I think that helped inform why they liked him as a player.
Yeah. Well, and to the, I guess we'll move on. But the person stuff, when I was watching some of the pre-draft interview things, that guy really does stand out as a cerebral, thoughtful kid.
Oh yeah.
And that's why when the F-bomb thing first happened, I didn't really see it because I thought, yeah, if this was Ace Bailey, right? If he would have dropped that, when Utah picks him, I'm like, oh yeah, that's not good. With this kid, I couldn't see the departure from who I'd seen in interviews to all of a sudden being like, no, I have a chosen destination and it's Oklahoma City. Like, nah, I didn't buy it.
I think it was an exasperation, you know what I mean? Like, I think the funny part about that word in general, right, is like the utility and the fact that it can do so many different things, and that's why people love it so much. It's a very stretchy word, and I do think that, like, his was more of an exasperation, like, man, I can't believe we did this, as opposed to, like, a frustration. And I think we just live in a time now where we like to go to the negative immediately.
Of course. Okay, so what was your favorite pick in this draft?
It's a great call. Look, obviously I'm a Charlotte Hornets fan. I was a little bit interested to see what they were going to do at number 4. I thought with Bailey on the board there, they may just go ahead and do it. I had a little bit of intel that maybe that could be something they do kind of like in the, the 11th hour, they just take the swing. But, Knipple was a really solid player. I think he's a good culture setter for that team. I mean, Brandon Miller is a guy who's going to be in the gym all the time. LaMelo is going to be in the gym all the time. Obviously, doing his LaMelo version of that, but I do think Kniffel and Liam McNeely as a duo, I really like them together, and I think they're going to be nice culture setters for the Hornets. They're not going to be all-stars, but they're going to be good guys. Trey Johnson with the Wizards, I just think that that fell perfectly for them, right into their laps. Trey Johnson, the guy, shoots 40% from three, one of the best, you know, creators off the dribble, shooting the basketball, led the SEC in scoring this season. So I almost feel like he got a little bit underrated as we kind of got into the minutia of this draft. But for the first eight guys to be freshmen in college basketball, the longest streak in NBA draft history, really cool. Yegor Dimon was the first one, I think, for everybody that we were all shocked by. I could see Yegor going eight. I could have seen Yakuchones going eight. The Nets, I think those were the two guys that they were on. They ended up going with Yegor because of his size. I don't blame them for doing that. I did find it a little bit shocking. I would say my favorite pick of the night would be Cedric Coward at number 11. I just like the Grizzlies. They're at 16. Obviously, they made that trade for Desmond. You know, they trade Desmond Bane to the Magic. They get the 16th pick. They turn that 16th pick into Cedric Coward. You got Jalen Wells and Cedric Coward now. I really like those two guys on the wing. I think that they're very special. I think Jalen Wells is a 6'7" shooting guard. Cedric Coward slotting down to the small forward. Those two guys, you get Ja hopefully healthy and playing basketball. Jaren Jackson at the four, Zach Edey at the five. I just think that Memphis with Cedric Coward, I think that's a really good pick. I thought that there were a lot of teams that kind of had circled Cedric Coward and thought he was going to be the guy. The Bulls, I think, you know, expected to get him at number 12. They ended up, you know, kind of back-ending into Noah Singe, who's a talented player. But for me, Cedric Coward was the fascinating, tantalizing player kind of in this group. Only played six games this year at Wazoo, but you could see what he could be and started at D3 and moved his way up. He's just a great kid. I went to his workout here in Los Angeles. I mean, everybody loves him. Everyone, you know, loves talking to him. But if you just look at his shoulders, the broad shoulders and like what he's going to fill out to be, I think that Cedric Coward could be a stud. And I really think that Memphis had a really good draft. So I think my final answer, number 11, Cedric Coward.
So I like that. And I like that one too. I don't know as much about him as you do, but I will say that when it happened, when it finished, my immediate thought was, you know, that's pretty good asset management where you're flipping out Desmond Bane and then you're just immediately replacing him with a super cheap version, right? Like I just went, okay, I can see at least a little bit of the vision here in terms of you pivoting. I love your Trey Johnson point though, because I felt this all along, like, why isn't this guy higher? And it's because, yeah, the top of the draft was so loaded this year, and it just kind of felt like he was viewed as outside of the, like, all of a sudden Kniffel became, oh well, this guy's undoubtedly going to be one of the top five picks. And I went, yeah, okay, right. Like I really like him too, but that wasn't the way that it was basically the entire season. And then he had this massive stock surge. And I felt like with him getting in the top four and all of the conversation around Ace Bailey and the workouts and Cooper Flagg and Dylan Harper, that Johnson kind of ended up getting boxed out. And he was always like my dream pick for the Raptors, where I was like, God, this guy, because not only do I think he's really great, I think he's just going to be so fun to watch. That from just a pure entertainment standpoint, I'm like, God, sign me up for watching this guy for the next 7 years. So, yeah, I thought that was a really good one for the Wizards. The worst stuff, can you explain to me what the Pelicans are doing? Because, yeah, I'll just actually read a text from my brother when that trade happened. He texted me and said, did the Pelicans get somebody that I don't know about?
Great question. Look, I do think that Joe Dumars obviously is walking into a situation where there is a family that's at play and they're going to make their own decisions. The Derek Queen trade, I like in a vacuum. You know, I really like Derek Queen. I think Derek Queen's a really talented player. I was excited to see where Derek Queen ended up. I really thought the Chicago Bulls had a perfect chance to get a guy who would really embrace the city, and I think a lot of people would have embraced him, but they, of course, do what the Bulls do, and they passed on him. So he's going to go to New Orleans. I think Zion, obviously Joe Dumars believes that Zion is still a franchise guy, and he thinks that he can get Zion to be the fully formalized version of himself. There are some talented pieces, Trey Murphy, Herb Jones, right? I mean, there are guys on that Pelicans roster that definitely, you know, pique your interest a little bit. But giving away an unprotected 2026 first-round pick, so much so that, like, the novice fan, you know, it's just like, what is going on here? Like, yeah. What are they doing? They traded up 10 spots to get into 13, where again, that weird, they were already kind of in that weird middle ground of the draft where anything was possible, you know, where Jan Hansen can be drafted at number 16, right? So, like, for them to make that bold of a move, to give up a pick with no protections on it, it felt very strange. I will say this about Joe Dumars. I know a lot of people are like, what's Joe doing? You know, this is embarrassing. This is a boomer move, all sort of stuff. I think this would be more of an ownership thing than I would say for Joe in particular, just to give people a little bit of background on that. But again, Derek Queen, Jeremiah Fears, they're two very, very talented guys. I do think that there is a push for New Orleans to simultaneously get younger and stack assets as much as possible while also trying to stay on the timeline with Zion. It's a very hard thing to do. We've seen the Warriors try to do it with Steph with the two-timeline theory. Two timelines typically don't work out. But again, yeah, the New Orleans Pelicans definitely became kind of the butt of this, first round. Everybody's making fun of them because of that pick that they gave up. But if you just look at it from the two players that they got, to spin it a little bit more positively, I really like Jeremiah Fears. I think Jeremiah Fears is going to be a really good point guard. I know that there's a lot of people talking about a three-point shot and all these sorts of things. I promise you, it will work itself out. And I do think that Derek Queen is a really, really talented kid. I do think that he has some natural touch, feel, natural ability to become a superstar potentially. So I like the two talents that they got. I don't like what they gave up. But again, ownership is involved and, there's a lot of suggestors. But then again, at the end of the day, ownership can make the final decision. But I like the two picks. I don't like how they got there. But again, that's semantics if it all works out in the end.
Yeah, I don't even think I went as hard on my Queen deep true thoughts yesterday as I should have, which is secretly he was the guy I was hoping the Raptors would end up with. Like, Malawak to me was the right pick. Queen was the more fun pick where I went, I really love variance in basketball. It's what I grew up on, right? Guys who are specialists, guys with different skill sets, players that don't all look the same, right? Like, the league has become so much more of, hey, are you between 6'6" and 6'9" and can you defend and shoot a three? I'm like, okay, got it. Right? Hey, can you handle the basketball? Can you try to get to the rim? Can you get fouled or shoot a three? Cool. I just liked Queen in terms of, again, the same thing as the Trey Johnson stuff where I go, yeah, I like the variants. I like unique players. And he just would have been a fun guy to have on your team. So I'm with you on that. The team I'm not with you on, or I don't know if I'm with you. I can't believe Brooklyn used all five picks. And yeah, I got to say, I think I hated every one. I don't like the Demon pick whatsoever at 8. He can't shoot. He had a midseason knee injury. And like, that's your guy that you're taking in that spot ahead of, like, there's at least six guys that were taken like immediately after him that I would have gone, oh yeah, I would be much more comfortable with this. If the Raptors had taken Demon at 9, this would be a different day for me. This would be a very different day in terms of my attitude and happiness. Yeah. I guess your level of shock that Brooklyn used all five picks.
I mean, I hope that there is some sort of plan at some point. I do think that from what little I know about what Brooklyn was up to, I do think Brooklyn tried their best to shop those picks because they tried to package a couple of those picks and move up and get, a couple of certain players that they were targeting. I think with Yegor in particular, they had really wanted Yegor, and they were worried that if they waited until 19, Yegor wouldn't be there. I think they're correct because the Bulls love Yegor as well, at least from what I was told. So, I mean, I do think that the Bulls at 12 probably would have got Yegor, so that's why they took him at 8. So that was sort of the rationale as to why they made the pick, when they made the pick. I think the funniest part of the draft for the Brooklyn Nets was when we got to, like, 26 and they get Saraf and then they get Danny Wolf back to back. It was like neighborhood picks, you know what I mean? Like, they were just trying to feed the boroughs of New York City, to get the local neighborhoods excited about their certain picks. I mean, that was the funniest part. I was saying during the draft, they did give a little bit of like 2009 Minnesota Timberwolves vibes where it's just like they're just going to keep taking guards until one of them is actually good. You know what I mean? Like the Timberwolves.
And then none will be.
Johnny Flynn. Yeah, right. Like they took Johnny Flynn, Ty Lawson, Wayne Ellington, Ricky Rubio, and Nick Kalathis, right? It's like one of them is going to work out at some point, we hope. But I do feel like there was a little bit of that with Brooklyn where they're just shooting from the hip. They're like, okay, if Yegor doesn't work out, then Traore may work out. And one of those two could play next to Drake Powell. And maybe Seraph could be like our, you know, Israeli D'Angelo Russell at some point and kind of, you know, conjure up those feelings that we had back in 2019 with him. And then Danny Wolf can be like a primary handler if we need him to be and all that sort of stuff. Like, you can talk yourself into it, but the fact that they actually made those five picks and they got to go in and figure out how to siphon out time and workout time, all this sort of stuff. I mean, it's going to be a mess. I figure that they're going to, you know, make some sort of move. But, yeah, five first-round picks, it was as dumb as it looked. And it really doesn't make much sense. So that's why they did what they did at 26 and 27.
Yeah. Now I'm sad we didn't get to watch an offense that was Yegor Demin and Josh Giddey and going, okay. So everybody plays off the two. That was Chicago's big vision that
maybe
was blown
the
up.
Poor thing that could have happened right there. You know
yeah. But we're finally going to get the answer to the question. Whenever there's a great college team, we're like, wow, could they win games in the NBA? That's the Brooklyn Nets. So we get to finally find out how they would do. Last one for me. So Canada, we've been priding ourselves. We just had, you know, four Canadians in the finals and one is the MVP and we got the second most players in the NBA outside of the United States. And we felt like, okay, we're a rising power when it comes to basketball, but it's pretty hard to ignore how many guys are all of a sudden coming out of France. And I wonder what you know about the development of their program and how this is happening all of a sudden at this rate where it feels like, yeah, every year, like, yeah, they did the Canada thing where it was a couple of years in a row with first overall picks. But now you're starting to see like that depth trickle in where you get into the mid lottery and all of a sudden there seem to be like four or five guys there every year.
Yeah, and, you know, the other Frenchmen continue to basically, you know, go recruit and tell, you know, their teams internally about different guys. You know, it's like, hey, you need to go check out this Berenger guy. Or like last year, you need to go check out Tijane Solon or whoever it may be, right? Like, and all these guys kind of come out of the woodwork. I do think that there is some sort of immigration rule that's happening with France where there's a lot of, African immigration into France. And then there's like a program that has sort of been built out over the past 20 years. That's like the bird's eye view version of what I've been kind of, you know, told about what the situation is there in France. So French basketball is obviously growing at a very high rate right now. And they've always had, obviously, talent. You know, we know about all the French, great French players. Shout out to Nick Batum. Shout out to Tony Parker. The list goes on. But this current iteration and the fact that they have Wimby as their, you know, figurehead, I think is the reason why it feels so much more imposing and it feels like it's so much more of an existential threat because not only are they freakishly long and, you know, ridiculously, you know, gifted.
Every guy is the same in terms of they're like, and his wingspan is twice the size of his body. You're like, okay, every single guy.
If you don't have a 7-foot wingspan, you can't play on the French national team. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Look at Koulibaly, for God's sakes. You know what I mean? Like every single one of those guys.
Yeah, no, it's feeling like a thing. It's feeling like the next Olympics, we're just going to watch the French team and it's just like all Gumby. It's like, good luck making a pass on these guys.
Absolutely. I will say just as far as like the Canadian side of it, I really want Team Canada to have like, I mean, this last Olympic run, it just, you know, it felt like Murray was out of shape. There's just a lot going on where it just didn't feel like it really fit together. But I'm ready for like the Shea, I'm the guy. This is my group of guys that I'm putting around me. Like, you know, Andrew Nimhard's on the team. You know what I mean? Like we're putting together like a true squad, like in the vision of SGA, and we let him go on a run because we need Team Canada to kind of send a statement, like kind of shock the system of the U.S. a little bit because U.S. basketball, we are, you know, just a little bit gluttonous, definitely full of ourselves. And I do think that, you know, a reality check is on the way very soon. I thought it was going to happen this year in the Olympics, but I would assume it's going to happen at the next one.
Well, look at what happened at this past Olympics though. Like who are the guys, right?
Yeah.
Steph, it's KD, it's LeBron. It's like, and also stealing Joel Embiid and having him show up for the one useful game to actually beat Jokic. Like all of a sudden Embiid is American. You're like, are you serious? That was worse than Kevin Durant going to the Warriors by like a factor of a million. But
and then he threatened to go to play for Cameroon the next time, which is great.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. Cause now he's like, yeah, I got one. All right. Yeah. I don't care about Olympic United States. I was like, really? You're going to hang that medal in your house? Like, okay. So people are going to come by and go, wow, way to go, Joel. That's the one thing you won. Yeah, I just think a lot of it goes back to AAU and the USA's flattened the curve where you go, mm-hmm. okay, if everybody's training the same way and then you can like dump a bunch of Canadians into the same system, you're going to end up with some Canadian guys who come out on top. Like it just, yeah, there's too much of the same. And when you're mm-hmm. basically across the board have a, this is the way that we do things now, rather than just play the game. That's why I think that there's so much of the European gravitation. That's why guys like Jakachonis do stick out so much, is because you're, or Demon, where you're like, oh man, these guys really know how to read an offense. They can play in the pick and roll. They can run this because they've probably drilled it a million times from like pro leagues that they played in or just actual games that they were in versus just being that, like they show these graphics of like Montverde Academy, right? And they go, look at all these players that were on this team. And I'm thinking, that sucks. How is that good for basketball that all the best players are all on the same team with a bunch of them not being able to actually even play the role that they probably have the talent to play at that level? Like, you want him to be a role guy when he's one of the best eight players in the country? I don't know. I feel like it's a draft stock thing, this professionalization of young sports that I've been talking about now for a long time on my show, where we've kind of lost the focus of play and it's become more about getting to the pros. And now when these kids are like, yeah, 14, 15, and they're trying to funnel them towards those academies, and then they want to be on a super team with eight other guys who are going to play in the NBA so that those programs can say, look who we've graduated into these programs. That's why you got to come here. It's not actually better for the development of the players, and it's certainly not going to be better long-term for the health of the league.
Absolutely. And it creates like this homogenous way of playing because everybody yep. is just kind of like doing the same thing, right? Like you said, it's the professionalization of it all. It's like the creativity gets taken out of, you know, the game so early on because everyone's like, we need efficiency. Efficiency has replaced creativity. And then when you watch something that looks the exact same and everyone's doing the exact same and they're the same size and they're the same wingspan and they're the same, yep. you know, jumping, you know, you're just kind of like, what is this? This yeah. feels a little bit different than what I used to grow up watching. And that's why when we see kind of these unicorn guys like a Kyle Anderson slow-mo, you know what I mean? They're just like, oh, yeah, that's right. There's like a guy that could just be totally different and weird and make an impact. That's what this is supposed to be.
That was the best part about watching TJ McConnell in the finals.
It's yes, like, oh, exactly.
Look at this guy come in here. It's just like hustle and he's getting to – you know, deep paint positions to shoot little jumpers and followaways. And you're going, God, who else is doing this right now? It's just not seen. And so you love watching it anyway. Hey man, again, great year for the podcast. Thanks as always for making time. I really do appreciate it. Tate Frazier of the One Shining Podcast with Tate Frazier, subscribe and review. Thanks for making time, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
Of course, anytime you need me, man. Good luck yep. With the Raptors and good luck with Summer League, man. I'll be watching.
Yes, absolutely. Well, maybe we'll talk to you then. There he goes, Tate Frazier of the Ringers One Shining Podcast. So last thing, I'm reluctant to do this at times because I'm sure that there's a lot of my work that isn't great. In fact, I am 100% positive of it. But the ESPN broadcast, can we just talk about it for a second? So you've got a general manager who's made picks like Draymond Green, who helped build the Warriors. And he's playing second fiddle to Stephen A. Smith, who, just like me, covers every sport. So there's so much you can do and it's like throwing takes out the entire night. And poor Bob Myers is struggling to try and actually analyze these picks. And it's just, I get that you paid him $10 billion or whatever it is, but can we get one event without him? Is there one thing that ESPN can do where it's not the Stephen A. Smith show and that you get a little analysis from a panel from some people who watch college basketball? Could I get a Bob Myers and Jay Billet? Like, it was bad. And the player interviews and top to bottom, it's got to be one of the worst covered events I've ever seen, where I didn't feel as though I got just about anything from the broadcast. And yeah, I did not like where that is going in terms of the way we cover an event where people are trying to get as much information as possible because most of us are learning on the fly about a lot of these guys. I didn't know anything about the French players. I was terrified the Raptors were going to take one of those guys because I hadn't done like any research. I was like, okay, I gotta risk this that they're not going to take a Senge. Please don't take a Senge, because I'll have to spend my entire night researching and watching clips and figuring out exactly who he is. You watch those events with, yes, an entertainment factor that's involved in it. Of course. But in my opinion, the modern sports fan in those situations wants information, wants analysis, wants to be able to try to grade out their pick, understand how they're going to fit within their team, what the values of the guy are, what the upside is. And if I was not someone who does this for a living, I'm not a professional when it comes to analyzing college basketball. I love it. I put a lot of work into the drafts every single year because I try to know a little bit. It's a little bit easier with basketball for me than the other sports because I just do gravitate towards watching college basketball more than any of the other developmental leagues. Like I don't watch as much OHL as I watch NCAA basketball. I don't watch as much college football as I watch college basketball. But yeah, if I hadn't done homework on Colin Murray Boyles, I don't know what I would have known about him through that broadcast. It was dreadful. Oh, really, really bad. Truly bad. Anyway, subscribe to this podcast. Reach out anytime on Twitter and Instagram. I already had one person reach out and was like, I think that the Raptors pick did like it here because I, Zapruder, taped it. I'm telling you, when you see this kid get interviewed, when you get to know Colin Murray Boyles, and I'm not trying to profess like I know this kid inside and out, but one of the main books on him is that he is the ultimate team first, positive attitude, thoughtful guy. So I refuse to believe with that character makeup that the Toronto Raptors are in some way to him a destination in which he was just unwilling to go, or not even unwilling, because clearly he's going to do that. Like Ace Bailey is going to go play for the Utah Jazz, even though that was probably his number one nightmare scenario. But I really don't believe he was upset. I really don't think that this is a story. I brought it up more as a joke. I will stake my reputation on this. There's just no way. What little reputation I have, I guarantee people are going to watch him do 8 interviews. He's going to do a bunch of the summer league content, the preseason content, and everyone's going to love this dude because he is absolutely one of those guys where you're just like, oh, he gets it. So I just don't think it's going to be a story. It's going to be something that he gets teased about. We'll remember it because of the fear, but non-issue for me. Anyway, subscribe to the podcast. Reach out on Twitter and Instagram anytime at JD Bunkus. Quick break. I want to talk a little about Scherzer and what I think is going to be the worst trade in the NHL offseason. That's next. So last night was basically the most who cares that the Blue Jays lost moment of the season. Max Scherzer came in and he pitched well. I think he was quoted saying, I could execute better. I pitched good. I didn't pitch great. Yep. Agree. It was fine. The biggest thing is that pitch 5 innings, 6 hits, 3 walks, 383 pitches, a couple of strikeouts. And afterwards, I have not seen, I went through his post-game interview. Didn't see anything about the thumb. He mentioned that it was frustrating that he had been dealing with it for the last couple of years. So yeah, it's not something that's going to go away. I would say that's sort of what I'm looking for today or over the next couple of days is how's he feeling now? Because you get that adrenaline boost when you are pitching, although he did have to exit his first start with the Jays because the thumb was just completely untenable. But yeah, how's he going to feel now? How's he going to feel before his next outing? Is it going to pop up again? Because yeah, I think we are kind of at the point, especially considering how long it took. Like it's almost July. Hurt that in the opening week of the season. If this happens again, it's tough to see how he ever pitches for the Blue Jays. That this will be the best outing of his Blue Jay career or whatever it is the next one. So that's pretty much it. I don't have much else on this game or much else on Scherzer. It's just, this is what I kind of expect from him. Maybe a little bit better, but ultimately, yeah, you get five innings from Max Scherzer. You get competent pitching. What was it, three runs? You take that all day long. That's who he's supposed to be. And it just the same feeling of part of the reason that I thought you signed him was to inject a little excitement in the fan base that missed out on some big names. And yeah, he's not that anymore in terms of he's not the big name with the big ability. He's the big name with some ability, but it's just cool to watch him pitch. It's just cool to see him in a Toronto Blue Jays uniform. And he is important, but I still think that pretty much no matter what happens here over the next month ahead of the trade deadline, well, less than that, but still, he can't really be impacted. There's just not enough runway, and there's not going to ever be enough trust with a 3-year injury for a 40-year-old player where it doesn't impact what you're doing deadline time-wise. You're saying you almost have to look at him like the sixth starter, which sucks, but I think it's the reality, right? What are you going to do? You're going to treat him as though he's the four? No, he's the six. At the deadline, he's the six. If he's there at the end of the season, then he's whatever you need him to be or whatever he is. But yeah, with only a few weeks ahead of the trade deadline, I don't think that there's going to be, there's no other guy on the team, right? That I'm checking the post-game interview immediately after the game going, what's he say? What's he say? What's he say about the thumb? I don't see that changing, but it was cool. But it was cool, and I did enjoy it. Last thing, worst trade, in my opinion, of the NHL offseason so far, and I don't think it's going to be topped. Is the Vancouver Canucks trading for Evander Kane? With no salary retention. When I finished the year and I brought on Christopher Stieg, and I think I talked about this with Myrtle too. Hey, with Edmonton, this year could be a little tough. They got to give Bouchard the raise. They got to figure out their goaltending situation. They probably got to get a little younger. They're going to have to shed some money. And I looked at that Kane contract and thought, it's not immovable, but I would have guessed they had to attach an asset to it. Yeah, Kane's better than where Patrick Marleau was in his career. And he's making less than the Caps hire, but woo. I saw some people in Vancouver try to spin themselves into, well, he's in a contract year. Yeah, okay. Who cares? So division rivalries, regional rivalries mean nothing now? You bailed out the Edmonton Oilers. That's a celebratory day for the Edmonton Oilers to be able to get off of that money and get a fourth-round pick back? I was blown away. I do not think that there is going to be a worse move. Evander Kane? That was your thing? You're like, we can't pay Brock Besser. We got to pay Evander Kane. And we got to take him off the hands of the Edmonton Oilers and make their cap situation a whole hell of a lot easier while also giving them something for the privilege to do so? Insanity. Insanity. When I saw Kane to Edmonton, I went, oh, okay, what did Edmonton have to give up? Nothing. Just the player. Insane. Moved by the Vancouver Canucks. One of, again, the most poorly run franchises in maybe all of professional sports. All right, we're back tomorrow. Subscribe to the podcast. See you tomorrow.